Viscount Allenby, Reel 3. Viscount, you were saying about differences in attitudes to work in the tank corps compared to the cavalry.
Yes, I think I mentioned it before, didn't I? There was one difficulty, I think, that arose. They used to say to me, the tank corps instructors, why is it we can't get these cavalry officers to come back as instructors here? Why do they know? They seem reluctant to come back. And I said, who do you want? Who are your star turns? And they gave me a few names that I knew, you see. I said, look, the answer to that is that most of the people you have named are the people who always want to be away on leave to go hunting or something like that. And yet you are naming them as the star performers. And there seems to be a lesson that comes from that, to my mind. Anyhow, that the chap who goes away and has plenty of leave and one thing or another, he produces the results. And I think this was very much almost a cavalry, or what you would call it, a tradition. Anyhow, certainly it was very obvious down there at Boyington. If these people got away to go hunting or whatever it may be, or go to London, or for that matter, you know, they jolly well saw that they made up for the work that they'd missed, you know, they borrowed somebody else's notebook or something like that, you know. And it was significant that the people that they wanted most, as the star turns, were the people who'd been away most. And I think they were very much afraid. I know, talking to some of them, that if they got back those instructors, they'd never be allowed to go away at all. So it was a little different than perhaps the approach to work. The tank corps idea, I think, seemed to be more that you just had to jolly well do the hours, and that was that, you know, no going away. It was rather funny, rather odd that it should have happened that way, but it did a bit.
Wasn't there an incident with Randolph Churchill about that, as you mentioned?
Oh, well, yes, I think this was when war had started. They were so reluctant to give them leave. I remember Randolph Churchill was a student then, and Winston had particularly asked him to go up to Liverpool with him, and automatically his leave was turned down in the first place. But I think he went in the end as well.
You mentioned that the mechanisation taking place now in the late 30s, they didn't have their horses with them, I take it, the regiments, did they?
No, not down there. Oh, well, I mean, they could do under private arrangements, yes. Mm. I mean, when I say private arrangements, I mean they could stable them in Bear Regis or somewhere like that and hunt them. But they didn't have them in government stables or anything anymore.
How successful would you say the cavalry were at adapting to the mechanisation and it was the actual courses?
Oh, I think very well. I mean, I'm not suggesting that they were brilliant when war actually broke out, but they were terribly, terribly short of equipment, even for training, if I remember rightly. In 1938, for example, 1938 and early 1939, or even later than that, I think they were very short of equipment.
What were they training on? What sort of things were they doing?
No good asking me. I afraid I didn't. I ought to have known. I ought to know, but I can't remember what the tank of that day was called. It was probably called a Mark something or other. That was all, you know. Normally, I think, give them names. As they do now, like Centurion and so on.
Do you think that the tank corps, in their attitude to the cavalry, felt that their independence was being threatened? Do you think that?
Well, I think it would be natural if they did. You know, they rather thought there was a lot of strange people coming over to take over some of our jobs. They must have felt that to a little bit, a little extent, I think. But I think, again, they accepted it as inevitable. I mean, obviously, there was going to be very little use for horse cavalry in the 1939-45 war. In fact, probably none at all in Europe. And What are they going to do with the cavalry regiment anyhow? I mean, they were the right people, because you see, even though this business of eye for country comes in too with a tank very much. I mean, or it did in those days. I suppose tanks now are not up to date in these things. I mean, they can go anywhere. You can just barge, but it wasn't the case, I think, at the outbreak of war. I mean, you'd soon have all the tracks bust or something like that if you weren't able to choose your ground, you know. And so, again, the cavalry soldier, with his eye for country, was the right person to train that sort of thing. And I think I'm right in saying that they were, on the whole, armed with the lighter tank rather than the heavier ones. I wouldn't be certain whether I'm right there or not.
To your knowledge, did the Tank Corps make any special courses for this large influx that was going on? Did they sort of have a crash course or something?
Oh, yes. Yes, very definitely. I mean, there were special courses. Definitely.
So how long, roughly, would a cavalryman come into Bovington? How long would he be there before he was out again?
If my memory is right, a very short time. It depends a little bit on what course he was doing, of course. But a very short time, I think. It might only have been 3 months, you know.
You were there quite a long time, and obviously you got to know the chief instructor of the Tank Corps and things. Did they discuss with you, or was it discussed, the role of the tank as opposed to the cavalry? Was this a...
No, not any more than in private conversation in the mess or something like that. Because, you see, these people, they were only learning the mechanics. That's all they were learning there. They were learning how the internal combustion or a diesel engine or whatever it was, how it functioned. And tactics and so on were not coming into that part of the... In fact, I don't know how, when or where they learned their tactics. So I suppose there are a lot of various tactical schools, and no doubt people were trained there and went back and trained other instructors within the regiments.
Would you say that you were aware then of the sort of larger discussions going on about the use of mechanization?
Oh, yes.
People like Fuller and Little Hart, was this the
idea? Well, of course, it was all in the press. I mean, there was a lot of good articles when those sort of people were writing the Times and then something. There was a lot of argument, of course, too. Different opinions. Because I don't think, well, I suppose it's the same in both world wars. Nobody could quite visualize what it was going to be like, how it might develop.
Who would you say at that time you considered to be a sort of outstanding tank leader or commander? Were there any people that you'd heard of?
Oh, I don't know. There were so many, weren't there? I don't know. I remember their names now. I mean, Little Fuller, of course. He was a great expert. Oh, there were lots of them. What were their names? I can't remember. You caught me out of the names.
Did you come across Hobart, for example?
Yes, that's the name I was trying to get to think of. Yes, indeed. Very much so.
Did he ever visit you, or did he ever come down there?
Oh, I think he came down there, I think, but it wouldn't have been, he wouldn't have been really concerned with my department, which, as I say, were just the running of the engines, but I certainly met him down there, yes.
What were your main problems yourself, you know, in your sort of job? Did you have any sort of...
Down there? There weren't any, really, except keeping the peace, as they were, I think.
In your actual day-to-day work, it was pretty straightforward, then.
Oh, yes.
What precise, were you working on the administration of numbers coming in, were you?
Well, that sort of thing, yes. I was just adjutant of the thing and instructors and all this, that and the other, you know.
There's been a sort of general view, if you like, of the cavalry being resistant to mechanization. For example, I've heard a couple of tank people say that the cavalry didn't want to get their hands dirty. Would you say that that is a sort of valid view?
No, I don't think so, because I think nearly everybody was sensible enough to know that it was inevitable, and therefore might as well be accepted. And I think probably, I mean, I wasn't, of course, in a regiment that was freshly mechanized, so I didn't know, but I mean, I think probably the feeling was that this has got to happen, and it's got to happen jolly quick, because, I mean, it was fairly obvious that within 2 or 3 years of 1937, 38, something like that, there would be war somewhere.
Would you say that the cavalry had a sort of too much of a sentimental attachment to the horse by then?
Not too much, no. I said right at the beginning, I mean, the horse was so much, well, the majority of cavalry officers certainly. And as I said before, I think right away through, I mean, when the trooper got his horse, it was his horse, and the darn thing was going to save his life, and it might just, you know. And they loved them. Everybody who's had much to do with horses loves them, I think. They're the most wonderful animals in the world that they put up with. Most willing animals, too, believe it or not. Some people won't share that view, but... If they're not willing, it's usually because they've been wrongly handled.
You were at Bovington when this amalgamation took place and you became part of the Royal Armoured Corps. What sort of reaction was there to that?
Nothing, I don't think. In particular. It was inevitable. No, I think it was very, very well accepted right away through by both, if you would like to call it both sides, I mean the tank corps and the cavalry regiments, very well, I think. Well, I guess there was a little bit of, you know, that would have been the idea that the better your horse, the more likely to save your life in wartime. It might well be transferred a little bit to the tank or whatever vehicle you were travelling in.
Did it make any practical difference to you down there?
No.
When the war broke out, was there any significant developments took place at Bovington right at that time?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the whole thing, everybody did a great deal more work. And there wasn't a little bit of sort of, anyhow, my point of view, which was a little bit of sort of pre-war army idea. I didn't do much work in the afternoons. And then, of course, the whole thing had to be stepped up a lot. And the courses, they had to be more concentrated then, and they had to get through the courses quicker. And there were more and more people coming in, so there was a lot of duplication. A great deal more work was done, of course. Of course it was.
Do you think of the outbreak of war that the cavalry regiments that had been mechanized, did they regard themselves, do you think, as fully armored force?
Very much so, yes. I think so, yes. Very much so. No, I think that possibly the fact that war came on so suddenly after the inauguration of this mechanization program, it probably... Gave people the idea that this was inevitable and important and urgent, and people were keen to make a show of it, you know, make it work, in fact.
Thank you, Vakant.